Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, November 2nd, 2023. Marfa resident P.J. Serrano pleads guilty to possession, transportation of child sex abuse material. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Patricio Javier P.J. Serrano, a 36-year-old Marfa resident and softball coach, arrested in May, pleaded guilty last week to one count of possession of child sex abuse material and one count of transportation, aiding and abetting. Serrano faces 5 to 20 years in prison for the transportation charge, in addition to up to 20 years for the possession charge. Federal District Court Judge David Counts will determine Serrano's sentence after considering U.S. sentencing guidelines as well as other statutory factors, according to a press release from the United States Attorney's Office. A final sentencing will likely take place in the new year, said Serrano's attorney, Shane O'Neill. Mr. Serrano decided to plead guilty and accept responsibility in the hopes that Judge David Counts will look favorably upon him in sentencing, said O'Neill. Serrano has been held without bond since his arrest in May after investigators with the Federal Bureau of Investigation and Texas Department of Public Safety discovered multiple photos and videos depicting child sex abuse material stored on Serrano's cell phone and in a web browser, according to a criminal complaint. Investigators found that Serrano also sent links of child sex abuse material to other individuals via email in 2017 using the application IMGBOX, whose servers are located outside of the United States, according to court documents. Around a month after Serrano's arrest, a previous romantic partner of his, 32-year-old Marfa resident Sonia Murillo, who worked as a property manager and substitute teacher at Marfa ISD, was arrested and charged with child sexual exploitation. At least 8 videos of Murillo performing sexual acts on a young child were uncovered by investigators while conducting a forensic review of a cell phone from a different child pornography investigation in Marfa, according to the criminal complaint. It is unclear whether or not the two cases are related. Murillo is being held without bond while court proceedings, for which there are no recent public updates, continue. Photo by Alex Marks, courtesy of the Chinati Foundation. Copyright 2023 Robert Irwin Artists' Rights Society, ARS, New York. Visitors spend time with Robert Irwin's untitled Dawn to Dusk, 2016. Chinati Foundation honors passing of contemporary artist Robert Irwin. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Contemporary American artist Robert Irwin, renowned for his site-specific installations that center light and space, and contributor to the Chinati Foundation, passed away on October 25th at age 95. This past weekend, in his honor, the museum held a free open viewing of Untitled Dawn to Dusk, a large-scale installation completed by Irwin in 2016 at the site of the abandoned Fort D.A. Russell Army Hospital. All of us at the Foundation are deeply saddened by his passing, but we are grateful to spend time with his work often, said Chinati Director Caitlin Murray. Untitled Dawn to Dusk invites observers to consider their surroundings and the light and space in Marfa with heightened awareness and appreciation. The significant C-shaped building, complete with a courtyard garden displaying basalt columns, remains the only freestanding structure created by Irwin as a singular work of art. The interior of the building is split into two sections, light and dark. Transparent scrims bisect walkways and reflect light, while windows placed above eye level offer carefully framed West Texas sky views. Irwin, who was friends with Donald Judd, began planning the project in 1999 and contributed to the museum in many ways throughout the years while working on Untitled Dawn to Dusk, said Murray. Throughout the 17-year period during which this permanent installation was conceived, refined, and constructed, Irwin presented a series of his working drawings, a temporary scrim exhibition, and multiple fluorescent light pieces at Chinati, said Murray. The artist's dynamic life and mark on Marfa is the subject of a recently released documentary, Robert Irwin, A Desert of Pure Feeling. The film includes footage of Irwin on site at Chinati for the installation of Untitled Dawn to Dusk and was directed by Scene Marfa co-founder Jennifer Lane. Marfa residents Joseph Casciola and Carolyn Pfeiffer were also involved in the film. Admission and guided tours of the Chinati Foundation are free for Tri-County residents. For more information, visit chinati.org. Big Bend State Reps Morales Blanco vote for enhanced human smuggling penalties. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Austin. Last Wednesday, the Texas House of Representatives passed SB 4, a bill that would increase penalties for human smuggling and the operation of stash houses. Pending the governor's signature, the law will increase the mandatory minimum for those convicted of human smuggling from 2 to 10 years. The bill's success represents a tipping point in Governor Abbott's third called special legislative session, which began on October 9th. So far, immigration has dominated discussion on the floor. The governor's other priorities for this session, including contentious school voucher and COVID restriction bills, may have to wait until this session ends on November 9th. This year, state Republican representatives have honed in on passing restrictive immigration legislation in response to a perceived border crisis, hoping to fill gaps left by federal immigration laws President Joe Biden refuses to enforce, per a statement released by Abbott's office. Human smuggling was also a hot topic during the 2021 legislative session when the requirements for charging an individual with human smuggling were relaxed and the crime became a state felony. Before the law took effect, state prosecutors needed to prove that money had changed hands to accuse someone of being a smuggler. After its implementation, that evidence was no longer needed, and all immigration-related crimes brought in by state law enforcement became felonies. Those enhanced charges were not universally popular with local law enforcement. In the Big Bend, Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson blamed the enhanced penalties for filling the Brewster County Jail, a problem that would require a pricey expansion project to address. Dodson told the Sentinel that the county had processed more felonies in the 6 months after the law took effect than the total number of felonies for the entire previous year. Brewster County makes money off of housing federal prisoners. With so many state felonies, the county no longer could rely on that income stream. "We're getting hammered," he said. For Presidio County law enforcement, jail space was not the issue, simply that they weren't arresting that many folks suspected of smuggling. In the same time frame cited by Dodson, only 6 people were apprehended for human smuggling out of around 200 people detained for immigration-related crimes. Enhanced penalties for human smuggling have also been a major talking point in the State House this year. SB 4 borrows language from HB 800, a bill that died in the Senate back in May. HB 800 would also have raised the mandatory minimum for smuggling to 10 years if smugglers were also implicated in bodily injury or the death of a migrant. That minimum would have been set at 15 years. Both HB 800 and its successor bill, SB 4, were popular on the Republican side of the aisle, but also earned a few borderland Democrat sponsors. Both Senator Cesar Blanco and Representative Eddie Morales, whose constituents include Tri-County residents, voted in support. Blanco cited an uptick in apprehensions of smugglers and owners of stash houses in his hometown of El Paso, up 80% over the course of a single year, per statistics provided by CBP. This bill will crack down on cartel smuggling and stash house operations with enhanced penalties to better protect our local neighborhoods and migrants preyed upon by the cartels, he wrote in a press release. Morales' team echoed Blanco's anti-organized crime rhetoric. "Everyone in my district knows the severity of human smuggling and the cartel's profits behind it," he wrote. Not everyone familiar with the legislation thought it would have the intended effect. Some felt that instead of targeting cartel boogeymen, the law would likely catch vulnerable, unaffiliated folks in the crosshairs. Kristen Etter of Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, TRLA, a nonprofit offering free legal services to underprivileged people across Texas, said that her organization has seen human smuggling-related cases balloon in recent years. Before HB 4 passed the Senate, Etter testified before the Senate Committee on State Affairs that TRLA had rendered services to over 3,000 individuals charged with state-level immigration offenses since enhanced penalties took effect in 2021, a large percentage of whom had been charged with human smuggling. She had also observed a particularly troubling trend in more populated areas along the border. Rather than transporting migrants themselves, people involved in high-level smuggling operations posted ads on social media looking for drivers. Those who responded, typically younger, vulnerable folks looking for extra cash, signed up, not aware of the severe consequences. Under the new laws, transporting migrants in a vehicle, knowingly or unknowingly, concealed or unconcealed, now carries a 10-year minimum sentence. "We don't have that for rape. We don't have that for murder," she said. With SB 4 almost on the books, lawmakers and advocates on both sides of the aisle have their eyes on HB 4, a bill that would create a new state crime for crossing the U.S.-Mexico border anywhere except for a port of entry. HB 4 borrows language from SB 11, another special session bill that died in committee. HB 4, SB 4, and other recent Texas immigration laws have proven controversial, with some arguing that states do not have the power to supersede federal immigration enforcement. Opponents cite Arizona versus United States, a 2012 Supreme Court decision that struck down similar efforts to expand local law enforcement's power to curtail immigration-related crimes. Senator Blanco spoke out against the measure. The federal government already has an offense for unlawful entry, and that has not turned away desperate migrants looking for a better life, he said. At press time, HB4 was headed for a series of public hearings. The Big Bend Sentinel will continue to report on this special session's legislation as details become available. The offices of Eddie Morales, Cesar Blanco, and Greg Abbott did not return requests for further comment. Single voter to decide on finalization of Lajitas Utility District following election mix-up. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Brewster County. An election to finalize the creation of a Lajitas Utility District within 2,700 undeveloped acres of the Lajitas Golf Resort and Spa, previously thought to be open to all registered voters in voting precinct 7, has been discovered by officials amidst early voting to only be open to one individual. Laura Nussbaum, Elections Administrator for Brewster County, said the error was due to a miscommunication between her and the utility district's attorney, Ronald Freeman, whose office was responsible for placing the initiative on the ballot. Freeman told the Big Bend Sentinel that he failed to explain to Nussbaum that only voters living specifically within the district's boundaries, as opposed to all voters in the precinct, are eligible to vote in the confirmation election. This was my mistake, said Freeman. I take responsibility. I should have communicated more clearly with the elections administrator. The confirmation of the utility district, which was first created by an act of the legislature in 2011, is required by state law to be put up for a public vote. Freeman said the district, while not pursuing any specific projects at this time, is seeking to become active. We haven't used it yet. It's going to be born after this confirmation election, said Freeman. If approved by the one eligible voter, the district will have the power to levy taxes, issue bonds, and more. Utility districts are typically created by developers for infrastructure projects and have broad powers to implement water, sewer, and other utilities and construct road and drainage improvements, according to Freeman. Municipal utility districts, or MUDs, are common throughout the state, with nearly 2,000 active districts, according to the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, but less common in the Tri-County area due to a lack of large-scale developments. Nussbaum said it was her first time encountering a utility district election. The utility district election also involves the singular voter selecting any number of 5 permanent district directors. Names on the ballot include George Kutch, Renee Lorenz, Brent Ratliff, and H.C. Ross, Jr., and Morgan Jones, most of which have been serving informally since the creation of the district in 2011. Many are affiliated with Energy Transfer, a company co-founded by Lajitas Golf Resort owner and billionaire Kelsey Warren. Freeman said the one individual who is eligible to vote has been contacted by the district about the initiative. We actually have a fella residing in the district who I hope will vote. We've asked him to, explained the vote to him and what he's doing, but other people cannot vote, said Freeman. Nussbaum was unable to share the name of the one eligible Lajitas Utility District voter because they have not yet cast a ballot. Nussbaum said she previously provided a copy of the Precinct 7 voter rolls to Freeman, which show a total of 180 voters living in the precinct, both in Lajitas and Terlingua, and wasn't sure why the issue hadn't been raised before early voting began. Now, she said, election officials were scrambling to rectify the situation. "We're having to reprogram the machines so that one eligible voter is able to vote, both the constitutional amendment and the Lajitas district election, and then the other 179 are eligible to vote only the constitutional amendments," said Nussbaum. "Printed ballots for the election had already been ordered," said Nussbaum, "and can no longer be used." Freeman said the district would compensate the county for the incorrect ballots. Nussbaum said only one Precinct 7 voter participated in early voting before the Lajitas Utility District election error was discovered. She was unable to confirm whether or not that individual, who is not the one individual permitted to vote on the utility district and directors, voted on those measures. Freeman said the canvassing process after the election should allow district leaders to weed out invalid votes, and they would work with the Attorney General's office as needed to correct the situation. "The board has the power when it canvasses those results to say that vote's not going to be counted because we know that vote was in Precinct 7 and not district boundaries," said Freeman. "If the one eligible voter decides not to participate in the election or votes against the measure, the district will have to decide whether or not to hold another election, if possible, or will dissolve," said Freeman. For more information, see the article titled "Lajitas Golf Resort Brings Forth Ballot Initiative to Finalize Utility District Establishment," published last week in print and online at BigBendSentinel.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, October 26th. City to replace reservoir lid and drill new water well. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Tuesday afternoon, Monahan City Council approved two engineering service agreements with Enprotec Hibbs and Todd for services related to replacing the cement cover on the Maxwell Reservoir and to drill a new water well at the Hog Ranch well field. The projects will be funded with $1.9 million from the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds, or SLFRF. The SLFRF was authorized by the American Rescue Plan Act, which allocated $350 billion to state, territorial, local, and tribal governments across the country to support their response to and recovery from the COVID-19 public health emergency. These funds are required to be allocated by the end of 2024 and be spent by the end of 2026. The Maxwell Reservoir, located south of the city cemetery near the ball fields, is an underground water storage tank and holds close to 1 million gallons of water pumped directly from the well field. Water is then pumped from the reservoir to the two water towers in town and finally to the consumers' homes. Quote, "The reason this tank is so important is because the tank receives water by gravity flow. So even if a well at the well field isn't pumping, it can still receive water," City Manager Rex Thee said. Currently, the lid on the reservoir is cement and beginning to show signs of failure. Quote, "The lid has been in place since the reservoir was constructed approximately 70 years ago, and we've had some concerns recently of the lid's structural integrity. If it did fail and fall in the tank, the city would be halted from using the tank for some time, Thee said. The plan is to remove the cement lid and install an aluminum lid, upgrade the overflow and discharge pipes, valves, and upgrade the fencing around the reservoir. Quote, the new lid will be dome-shaped, opposed to the current flat lid, which will allow for better rainwater runoff, he said. The lid will also be engineered to measure the water quantity digitally, which will allow city officials to keep track of water levels or issues in real time. Due to the age of the tank, Thee said, quote, the engineers will drain and inspect the tank while the lid is off, end quote. During the construction, residents should not notice any difference in water pressure or water quality. Quote, the water will just bypass the tank, and after the chlorination process, it will be pumped straight into the water towers, he said. Along with the towers, the city also has water holding tanks at the well field and the country club. Construction is slated to begin early next spring and should take roughly a month to complete. Quote, we decided on beginning construction in the colder months because, on average, consumers use less water then, Thee added. The engineering firm is also tasked with engineering a plan to drill a new water well at the well field. The new well will join the seven other wells and be situated upstream in order to get the best water supply. Construction on the well will begin by year's end and wrap up near the first of the year. Once drilled and motor placed, it will go online on an automatic schedule like the older wells, Thee said. The pumping schedule is based on how much water is needed in town. Quote, we have bigger wells which pump 11,000 to 13,000 gallons of water a minute, and smaller wells that will pump 7,000 to 8,000 gallons a minute. Adding another well will mean some of the older wells can be pumped less, therefore sustaining the life of the wells overall, he added. Thee added, quote, I'm excited to get a good producing well for the city and provide the best quality of water we can at no added expense to the citizens, end quote. In regular business, the September accounts payable were approved by the council, totaling $972,000. Aside from the usual expenses, such as payroll, insurance, and fuel, some other items on the list were a payment of $12,000 to Modessa Telephone System for a new telephone system. Premier Waterworks Incorporated was paid nearly $6,000 for a chainsaw. A payment of $6,180 was paid to Juan Aaron Rodriguez for labor and materials for a concrete slab. The Monahans Volunteer Fire Department was paid $2,900 for drill, calls, and fires. A payment of $8,600 was paid to Grainer for a pipe threading machine. The September monthly departmental reports and minutes were also approved by the City Council. The City of Monahan's building permit report from City Inspector Joel Melendez reflected 20 residential permits in September. Included were 10 permits for additions and repairs, 4 for re-roofing residents, 5 for fencing, and 1 carport garages, totaling $91,000. 6 commercial permits were issued in September for additions and repairs, totaling $472,000. Monahan's Municipal Court's monthly report for September showed 131 citations issued. Truck route violations for the month of September totaled 28, while the other citations were 14 tickets for speeding, 9 for failure to maintain financial responsibility, 11 for no driver's license, 4 for expired registration, 5 for running a stop sign, 7 for driving while license invalid, and 7 for minor in possession of tobacco, e-cigarette. Municipal court fees for September totaled $13,700. A total of 44 animals were euthanized in September, according to Animal Control Officer Ben McAlfrey's monthly report. Of the 47 total animals impounded, 24 were dogs, and 22 were cats, and one other. Zero animals were adopted or released, and McAlfrey picked up 15 deceased animals. As per city policy, impounded animals are only kept at the city pound for 3 days. Animals not adopted or picked up by their owners are euthanized after the 3-day waiting period. Anyone wishing to adopt an animal can call the Monahans Police Department at 943-3254. A report for the Roy Hurd Memorial Airport by manager John Cutbirth reported 34 local-based aircrafts and grounds have been mowed and trimmed. A report from Director of Public Works Richard Covington showed 51 violations issued for September. Of those, 18 have been cleared and the remainder are still pending. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of that meeting, which is on every agenda. The next City Council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, November 14th, in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. MEDC moves on fitness court construction and retail recruitment. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Monahans Economic Development Corporation directors agreed to a proposal from Kelly Evans Construction to begin the process of clearing the land for the new fitness court during their regular monthly meeting on Monday. Quote, "The proposal is for $19,000 and is to grade and compact the land using a backhoe," Director Ashley Adalto said. The new attraction, which is slated to be completed by year's end, came to fruition by the way of a $40,000 grant provided through the National Fitness Campaign and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas. The total project cost is approximately $155,000. The remaining $115,000 will mostly come from sponsors and the City of Monahans budget. The selected location of the fitness court is on 15th Street, beside the detention pond and directly across the street from Car Wash 828. MEDC formerly owned the 0.54-acre property, but had been unsuccessful in securing a buyer for the lot. At the time, City Manager Rex Thee said of the property, quote, "It would house the fitness court easily with room for parking and to expand if we ever looked at doing that. Water and sewer connections are close by, therefore installing water fountains could also be done," end quote. The property was recently deeded over to the city in order for it to be covered under the Parks and Recreation Insurance. The 76 by 76 foot fitness court features 7 functional training zones: core, squat, push, lunge, pull, agility, and bend, as well as thousands of body weight exercises and digital programming for adults of all ages and abilities. The court will also allow users to connect to a fitness app, which can be scanned on-site and access all the exercises, as well as join local classes. In other actionable items, the MEDC board approved a service agreement with the Retail Coach for retail recruitment and development. Quote, the cost of the 12-month agreement is not to exceed $36,500, and if the MEDC elects to extend the agreement for another 12 months, there will be an additional $25,000 fee, Adato said. The board moved on this option rather than Retail Strategies, who is used by the Pecos EDC, because, quote, if projects come up for this area, they would go to Pecos over Monahans, Adato told the board. Services included with the agreement include analyzing the retail market in Monahans, determine retail opportunities, site marketing, identify retailers and developers for recruitment, marketing, and branding, active rectification, and ongoing recruitment and coaching. Quote, hopefully, this will bring some attention to the commercial land we have to offer, Adato said. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable totaling $522,000, which included $6,600 for payroll and salaries, and $512,000 to Security Preferred Title for the 1200 South Stockton property. The financial report, reflecting a balance of $2.9 million in available funds as of September 30th, and minutes of the October 2nd special meeting were approved. Directors present were Hal Upchurch, Richard Irwin, Leticia Rodriguez, and Mary Elena Sines. Member Kathy Anthony was absent. Commissioners hire new county extension agent Monday. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. The Ward County Commissioners approved the hiring of a new county extension agent, Lizzie Chappie, during the regular meeting on Monday. The county has been without an extension agent for the past 10 to 12 months. Haley Cowley, the county's family community health extension agent, has been filling in on both roles, covering health and nutrition information sessions for the senior center and health fairs. Chappie hails from Ellsworth, Minnesota, where she grew up and graduated from Ellsworth High School before attending South Dakota University. Chappie majored in equine studies and minored in meat science at SDU and graduated last May. Quote, Ellsworth has a population of around 450, according to the last census. Ellsworth is 1 mile north of the Iowa state line. Oddly enough, that's where my family's farm is located, in Iowa, just on the other side of the statewide, Chappie said laughingly. During her teen years, Chappie worked at her uncle's meat locker and spent summers training 2- and 3-year-old colts with her sister, Callie. During school, Chappie participated in volleyball and basketball while keeping up with all her farm chores and also spent time hunting and fishing with her dad. Chappie became aware of the job through an online job website and applied for the position. Quote, I've been here about a month and a half. I moved to Texas with my rodeo horse, Cracker, and my border collie, Oliver. My Western Pleasure Show horse, Chip, stayed at home on my parents' farm, said Chappie. Chappie will be taking over a major portion of the 4-H events, including the stock show, which will be held at the end of January. Multiple departments called to 18-wheeler fire. At 1:10 a.m. Friday morning, the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department answered a call for an 18-wheeler trailer fire. The semi was in the B&B Wrecker Yard at 31st Street and Janus, where it had been placed earlier on Thursday. The Wickett Volunteer Fire Department responded to a truck on fire call in Pyote earlier on Thursday. The WVFD arrived to find the tractor of the semi on fire. The fire was extinguished and the truck was taken to the wrecker yard. The Monahans Volunteer Fire Department received the early morning call reporting smoke seen coming from the trailer of the truck. It was discovered the trailer was loaded with vacuum-packed bundles of T-shirts. Each bundle was approximately the size of a king-size mattress. Firefighters were on the scene for an extended period of time before Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms had his workers use a bulldozer to break open the trailer walls and bundles so the smoldering bundles could be better controlled. Patrolling law enforcement officials reported smoke still visible from some of the debris hours later. Library hosting free STEAM program. Free laptop awarded at end of session. The Ward County Library will be hosting a CompuDump STEAM team after school program on 5 Saturdays starting November 4th. The Science, Technology, Engineering, Math program is a free community program open to students in grades 6 through 8. These sessions will be led by a CompuDoc trainer, taking place from 8 a.m. to 12 noon at the library located at 409 South Dwight Avenue. Class dates are November 4th, November 18th, December 2nd, December 9th, and December 16th. The program, designed for middle school students, will explore how STEAM components are used to solve real-world problems by becoming detectives and solving the mystery of an art heist. Students will complete projects using microbits, breadboards, ultrasonic sensors, and 3D printing while learning coding, design, and more. A free laptop will be given to each of the students who completes all 5 days of instruction. Water and small snacks will be provided by the Friends of the Library organization. Quote, "We have space for a maximum of 15 students, and we have 3 students already signed up," librarian Brenda Kizar said. Registration forms are at the Ward County Library or sign up online at bit.ly/3D9GFY. For more information, email Katie Cano at katie@compudopt.org.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.